We're back on Oprah and Friends. I am talking with PJ Denuzzo, who's an investment advisor. His firm is Denuzzo Investment Advisors of Beaver, Pennsylvania. What's PJ stand for?
Patrick Joseph.
Patrick, have you been PJ since you were little?
No, that came along later when I was in college, actually.
Yeah, they all give you nicknames when you're in college. Everybody I know from college still calls me Jeannie. Nobody else. My father used to call me Jeannie. My mother calls me. My producer actually calls me Jeannie. That's interesting. But most people call me Jean. But everybody, I was Jeannie in college from the day I got there until the day I left, and not again since. Just interesting. Okay, we're talking about emotion and the market. Emotion is the thing that messes up everybody's portfolios. I mean, if we were just buying the indexes and holding, not selling, letting it ride until retirement, going with the ups and downs and the roller coasters of the market, if we just put our money in and didn't do anything, we'd all be much richer.
Yes, that is a correct statement.
So what is going on? Like, why can't we resist our own emotions? Do we just have too much information?
Yes, it's unfortunate, a little bit of paralysis from analysis. I feel sorry, and not in a condescending manner, but for individuals that are trying to get educated in the market, they're watching the TV shows and are reading all the magazines. And as I said, you can watch some of the expert shows, and someone will say buy company ABC in the morning and give you a litany of reasons why. And some other quote unquote expert comes on in the afternoon and says you have to be crazy to buy that same company. So it's really difficult on people. Overconfidence is one factor. Gene, I know that yourself and women have always known this, but women, as I think you've written on, are actually better investors than men. You know, one of the largest researches on that was studied 60,000 brokerage accounts and found out that women on average did about a percent to a percent and a half better than men did. And it was just because of that one factor, the overconfidence.
Well, we didn't sell.
Yeah, you just held tight.
Right.
Yeah.
Men believe they know where the market is going. There are a lot of people who believe they know where the market is going. Why do we think, despite all the evidence to the contrary, that we can actually call these things?
I think aside from the problems that men have genetically, I think, is we're at the epicenter of capitalism in the United States, and what have we learned our whole lives? That someone out there is working harder, somebody's burning the midnight oil, somebody's just digging in deeper, doing better research, and a lot of people will transfer that over to the stock market and say, well, if you just work harder, you roll up your sleeves more, there's things to find out that other people don't know, but it's just not there. I mean, it's the most competitive marketplace on earth, and there's just not information that individuals know that is not known. We're mentioning New York. I tell local people, it could be local towns. You know, what makes you think that you're in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania? You're in Monroeville.
You're in where?
Aliquippa, right down the road from us, where Mike Ditka, speaking of Chicago. Mike Ditka, he was born and raised right down the road from where I'm from. But what makes you think you're from these local areas, or maybe Poughkeepsie, New York, or Queens, New York, and you're going to be able to outsmart the brightest people on earth, and you're doing this in a part-time. It's just, you can't do it.
Yeah, well, and I think there's no reason to try. I mean, I think at this point, and I've been looking at this stuff for about 20 years, it's a waste of time. Because even if you get one right, you're going to get three wrong. Even if you have a lot of money and a lot of research at your disposal, why would you continue to try when all the research shows that people who just buy the market do better than people who try to buy parts of the market?
Yeah, but you hit the nail on the head, Jean. It's really the emotion is what takes away from it. And that's what took me years in my practice, because I looked at it the same way you did from the numbers side and said, well, this is pretty straightforward. Once you take a look at the data, we can go back to 1850 to the railroad stocks or last 100 years of indexes, taking a look at the Dow, et cetera, and it outperforms significantly. 60-40 split, 70-30, invest in indexes passively, low fees and low expenses. That's the way to do it. But then you've got this whole other half of the equation, which is the emotions and the mental component. And really, I think at least the last 5 years, if not longer, surprisingly, the Nobel Prizes and the folks that are getting lined up for them, it's not in the investment side, the number side, it's all on the behavioral science side. So what is causing people to shoot themselves in the foot when it appears to you and I, at least, to be obvious, this is how you should structure a portfolio? They're unearthing all the picadillos and maladies that people have that gravitate them towards failure.
And what are the most common ones?
In men, again, the overconfidence, it gets back to even the macro level from what we say is knowledge equals comfort. And so what I think is important for folks is to get somehow a base knowledge of the nuts and bolts, such as you're a proponent of. This is how the market works. It is efficient. It's difficult to outsmart it, and just accept that. You don't have to be the best, just be good enough. And once you come to that realization, I refer in my life just to getting away from investments, just from a priority list. Why are you beating your head against the wall at this? This is done. Do the 60-40 split, 70-30, whatever's appropriate for you, maybe 50-50, 40-60 when you're older. Leave it alone. There's a lot of other things. Go spend time with your wife. Bounce your grandchild off your knee. Take them to a ball game. Enjoy life.
Exactly. Once you put all these automatic mm-hmm. mechanisms to handle your money in place, then you can go do something else, because it is taken care of, and you can know that. The saving rate, though, in this country is the thing that stands in a lot of people's way. I mean, we don't save any money. We don't invest any money. We don't put money into our 401ks like we should, or our IRAs. What have you been able to say to people that has worked best in terms of changing their behavior and turning them into savers and investors?
Well, I guess a cold dose of reality as far as going through a financial plan, the financial planning components, and showing them this is where you're at today. If you don't get on the wagon, you're gonna have to work till 75, you know, something like that. That tends to get their attention. But unfortunately, people don't start spending saving anywhere near what they should till much later in the curve than they should. And of course, these dollars would have worked tremendously more to their value if they started in their early 20s, at least 25 or 30. But unfortunately, you see a lot of people don't start saving or putting anything away until they're 35, and you even make a case where they're getting matched at their company 401k. And now, it always amazes me when you see the people that aren't putting anything into their 401k and the company's matching them. You're making 100% on your money. Even put it in a money market account at 5%, so you're making 105% a year just for every dollar you put into your 401k up to the matching. So that would seem to be a no-brainer, but again, there's hundreds of thousands of individuals who aren't doing it.
Yeah, I was out at the University of Pennsylvania, which is where I went to college, just this past weekend, and on a panel discussion, and somebody used an example of the fact that, you know, contributing early, you cannot underestimate the value of getting in while you're young. They showed a chart, I've seen it many times, of a person who contributed to their 401k from the time they were 22 until the time they were 30, $4,000 a year for 8 years, then let the money just go. Didn't contribute another dollar. Another person contributed from the time they were 30 all the way up to retirement. And that first person who had just made those 8 years of contributions had more money at the end of the road. And so much less of it came from actual savings. It actually came from growth. It's just amazing. I want to shift gears for just a second. And I'm talking with PJ DeNuzzo, who's an investment advisor in Beaver, Pennsylvania. Talk about the financial planning process. I went out last week. I gave a talk to a group of 9/11 widows, actually. They belong to a group called Tuesday's Children. And they, one woman said to me, I have a financial advisor, but I have no idea if he's doing a good job. He shows me my statements. He says, look, we're doing better than this. We're doing better than this. But it's all numbers, and I don't understand it. How should the planning process work to make people understand that what they're doing will help them get where they want to go in their lives?
At the base of the planning process, I would recommend, not just because we're members of NAPFA, the National Association for Personal Financial Advisors, and we are the original fee-only organization, and even if it's not a NAPFA advisor, someone who's close to that, because you want to initially remove the conflict of interest from your individual situation. You don't want to things being placed in a portfolio that are not for your benefit, that there's a conflict there in the portfolio. And once you get started, what an individual wants to do is have a personal balance sheet. They don't know what their assets are, what their liabilities are, their personal net worth. They want to use that as their scorecard. So maybe not every year, but at least every couple of years, to be able to see how they're improving, what they need to work on. They would look at that with their advisor. They would look at their current cash flow situation, because that's what they're going to need to project forward into the future. And they would want to know very close as possible their current cash flow situation. And then a lot of fundamentals along with it to make sure that they have a current will in place, durable power of attorney, and things that any competent estate planning attorney would be able to cover with them.
We're talking about planning, though. So isn't it a matter of knowing what you want? Isn't it a matter of, like, I mean, how can you run a race when you don't know where the finish line is? And so many people don't. Isn't it a matter of actually setting some life goals rather than financial goals and then yes. just figuring it out,
yeah,
out gonna, how much they're going to
yeah,
cost?
Yeah, it's going to be all goal-based. I'm sorry, I started in the worm's eye view, but from the bird's eye view, yes, it's all goal-based. And then once you decide what your goals are, we certainly want to attempt to achieve all of them or as many of them as possible that are reasonable. And then I was describing the nuts and bolts.
Do you find yourself these days having to sit down with people and say, well, you know, if you want to actually achieve these goals, you're going to have to work longer?
Work longer or one of the biggest disconnects comes in what individuals feel that they'll be able to reasonably withdraw from the portfolio. They'll come in and say, well, the stock market's done 10% the last 20, 50, 100 years, what have you. And so I think I want to withdraw 9% a year. That's a safe number. Safe number is 3.5%. We have what we call a 5% spending limit. We don't have clients ideally withdraw any more than 5% from their portfolio. If you look at Bill Gates and Warren Buffett with their charitable trust that they put together, if you're withdrawing 5% a year, people forget about inflation all the time, mm-hmm. maintaining your purchasing power. If inflation is 4% and you withdrew 5%, you've got to do 9% just to break even, which is a pretty aggressive target to say you're going to be able to do that year in and year out. So that's very important to manage those.
What does that mean exactly, that you have to accumulate more so that you can live on withdrawing 4 or 5% a year?
Yeah, that's where it gets to. You're going to have to accumulate more in your portfolio or adjust your goals. We make up a wish list of goals to start off with, and then you may have to modify. Maybe you want to, folks in our area of the country want to go down to North Carolina for two or three golf outings, getaways for a year for 3 or 4 days. Maybe instead of three, you can just do two. Maybe you wanted to buy this, a higher level of a second home. Maybe you would have to make a minor modification in that.
It's not an easy thing to go through with people, to tell them you are not going to be able to afford this, because we live in this environment, in this country, where we just spend like crazy and put everything that we want, or many people do, even things that we can't afford, on loan, on a credit card.
Yeah, it's very difficult for us. I'm 49 years old, and we often say, talking amongst ourselves is very difficult on us as wealth managers, that we're really the parents in a financial relationship, and that is difficult. You're talking to 60, 70-year-old CEOs, individuals from Fortune 1000 companies, and you're having to walk through the same process we're talking about now, and it's unfortunately somewhat of a narcissistic environment that we're in with individuals, the way they're thinking, and we're the ones who has to bring it back to reality.
Yeah, do they fire you after you do that?
Well, I always, managing expectations is a big part of our job, and I always tell them early on, I remind them of the old saying, don't shoot me, I'm just a messenger. So once we get that out of the way, then we roll up our sleeves and get into it. But once we can show them that everything that we're recommending is really of a prudent variety, they start to come in. But that first meeting is generally
not the best.
Not the best.
What's the answer for somebody who's 45, 50 years old and clearly has not saved enough?
They would need to start to focus on maxing out their qualified plans as soon as possible.
Their 401ks, their IRAs.
401ks, Roth. And even there's so many tax-managed investments that are available now, Gene, that you could do a real good job even with after-tax money in an account. Years ago, you would have it tied up into an annuity and different things. But there's a tremendous amount of tax-managed stock vehicles that have very low taxable distributions every year that can be almost like a real close to an IRA almost.
If you had to give your very best one or two pieces of financial advice for people in the 1 or 2 minutes that we have left, what would they be? The things that work.
Things that work. Set a strategy that works for you on your asset allocation. If it's 60% in stocks, 40% in bonds, invest that 100% in indexes on both sides of the ledger. Enjoy and have a comfort level with that, knowing that you're doing the best. Don't second guess yourself. Give it time. Continue to add to the portfolio, and you'll be very happy.
I think that was 7 things. That's okay. That's all right. I've been talking with PJ Denuzzo, who is a investment advisor, financial planner in Beaver, Pennsylvania, about the fact that I am right. Boring is better when it comes to investing your money. You got to build the saving habit. You got to get into the market. You got to get into the game. Put your money in index funds that are cheap to own, inexpensive to own, and then just let it ride. And if that means that you take a nice long walk on the day when the market is either going crazy on the upside and you want to buy or crazy on the downside and you want to bail, get out of the house, get away from the phone, and do not call your broker. It's Gene Chatsky on Oprah and Friends XM. PJ, thanks so much for doing this with me today. It's been fun. I hope that you'll come back the next time you're in town.
Thank you very much.
Sure. We will be back to answer some of your phone calls and maybe your emails in just a minute.